62 together.
860, accept the initial guaranteed maximum price of $140 million from Balfour Beatty Construction LLC, doing business as Howard S. Wright, for the design and construction of the Portland Building Reconstruction Project, Progressive Design Build Relocate Services. And 861, direct the Office of Management and Finance to implement the Community Opportunities and Enhancements Plan for the Portland Building Reconstruction Project, and to allocate $1 million of the project budget for these purposes. And 862, authorize revenue bonds for the reconstruction of the Portland Building.
All right, we'll turn over to Fred Miller, the Bureau Director in charge of the Office of Management and Finance.
Thank you, and I think we have 45 minutes to do some things that should be relatively easy, but we'll impart some information. This is a different kind of meeting. I said, the relaxed Commissioner Fritz, and then the intimidation of dealing with the President of the Council. We'll try to get our wits together.
Okay.
Stay
calm.
Okay, thank you. I'm really happy with where this project is. It's a complicated project, and there've been lots of things done, and really a good team working on it, who knows what they're doing, and takes one of your first things you approve seriously. And we're going to do this for no more than $195 million and finish it by the end of 2020. And everyone working on the project knows that. So today we have a chance to move this along, but I want to, in a brief time, remind you where we have been and where we're headed for the rest of the year, and then get to the hopeful approval of three items. Counting October and January, you directed us to bring the building in at $195 by 2020. We set aside 1% for community enhancements and said we'd bring back a recommendation on how it should be spent, and you'll get that today. You gave us approval to hire Day CPM as the owner's rep that provides quality assurance, public outreach, and assistance in terms of reaching our DBE and WBE goals. And you allowed us to go ahead and make a selection of a consultant for the design, build, reconstruction contract. And today we're going to ask for approval because we have selected someone, and you'll hear from them later. And as of last meeting, or in January, you suggested or directed, one or the other, but we did, create a community oversight committee, where one of you has appointed one person on it. And it's the same sort of model as we have for the TOC. And you're going to get reports on this related to dollars, schedule, scope, sustainability, and DBE, WBE, MBE progress. And that's going to be formalized, and you'll get those through our Citizens Oversight Committee. So you know the three items today. I'll mention the things that are coming up between now and the end of the year to give you context. We would get our project team on board after your approval today, then they'll be co-located along with our staff, the owner's rep, and the architect and the contractor, making decisions in a process that Kristen will describe. By the end of October, we should have the information available on whether or not we have to move all of the employees out of the building during the reconstruction. There are advocates in doing it either way, to leave some in the building and some say move out. We're going to have that analyzed and know the costs and the benefits of doing that. We're going to have their Community Oversight Committee up and running and providing reports. And by the end of the year, we'll have a target price for the building. And it's going to be less than $195. So all of this is moving. Today's important to get the three decisions we've talked about to keep it on track. And again, I feel very good about where it is, and I think you will after you hear the presentations. So Christine's up. That's usually the exciting part.
Can I just ask you a question before we get started? Have you been either formally or informally briefing the mayor-elect on this? Because this is uniquely an issue that's going to continue beyond this year, so.
Not since last Friday. Yes, and that was one of the things we've talked about. And frankly, he wants to be comfortable with the numbers, which he will be. And his the head of the transition team has read all, everything we've got is on the web and accessible. And we got that to the mayor-elect. His transition directors read it, and I think they're going to be comfortable with our numbers on the selection. But my comment was, I think, and this is really an additional point, I think the real goal from his point of view is that we are trying to do everything right from a technology point of view, seeing what we can do about remote work and get the building prepared, looking 4 years ahead on technology. And we're trying to get a regional approach to this whole idea of community benefits, which all the other regional partners are interested in. He likes that idea a lot. So I think I'm going to feel good about where he is, but in that conversation, I felt good.
Mm-hmm. Christine Moody, Procurement Services. As Fred stated in January, Council authorized the exemption for the use of a progressive design build relocate solicitation process for the renovation of the Portland building. On February 12th, the project overview and contracting meeting was held prior to the release of the RFP at the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs. The city provided an overview of the project and the equity objectives, as well as solicited feedback from the contracting community that was then used to refine the scope of the RFP. Because of the nature of this progressive design build process, the RFP established aspirational goals for PTE services at 20% DMW ESB and 22% for construction services. We also asked contracting teams to submit a project-specific PTE DMW ESB plan, a construction services equity, inclusion, and diversity plan, identify a project diversity manager, city involvement in the selection of all PTE subconsultants, design team mentor protege services, and added up to 20 additional evaluation points for exceeding the PTE and construction services goals that were established by the city. The RFP was issued on April 1st, and on May 13th, three responses were received. The responses were evaluated by a 5-member selection committee, which included representatives from Facility Services, Portland Parks, Multnomah County, and the Minority Evaluator Program. Representatives from Technology Services, Planning and Sustainability, Office of Equity and Human Rights, and the City Attorney participated as technical advisors to the selection committee. Howard S. Wright and DLR Group were selected as the highest scoring proposal.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about the progressive design build approach and
bring. Could you give us your name, please?
Sorry, Kristen Wells, Facility Services. So back in October, we came forward with you and you set the price at maximum $195 million and to be completed no later than 2020. In order to achieve that, the thing that is essentially in flux is scope. And in order to maximize our scope, the approach that we have taken is an integrated approach. And the exact contracting type is progressive design, build, relocate. With this type of contract, we as the owner are entering into one contract with our selected team, Howard S. Wright and DLR Group. They will be handling the design, the construction side of things, and the relocation aspects of the project. The reason behind that is that we will be following a target value design process rather than the traditional design process that you design, you price, and then you have to cut back. With a target value design process, we will be ensuring that we stay on budget by having a continual pricing to the design approach. So the contractor, the architect, and the owner will be sitting in meetings on a regular basis. We will be working together to ensure that the design and the budget align every step of the way. What that also gets us to is being able to complete sooner and being able to have the target budget and the cost certainty earlier in the project. So as Fred mentioned, by the end of the year, we will know what our target budget is and the scope that aligns with that chosen target budget. The breakdown of the overall project, we have $195 million, and we came to you in January with a similar type of pie chart that broke down the allocation of costs. Since then, a few things have changed. Based on our owner's representative's recommendations and a market study that we conducted, we moved the lease costs into the owner's portion of the pie. We added some of the technology that we were going to potentially do into the design build relocate contract. So that's why the numbers are slightly different than what you saw back in January. The overall pie and the overall items under each of those pieces remains the same. We went out to the market and we did the RFP, and we are entering into a contract, if you approve today, with Howard S. Wright and DLR Group for a maximum of $140 million for their portion of the contract. Through the target budget process in this first phase that we'll be doing between now and the end of the year, we will be defining exactly what is within each of those pieces, but the general breakdown is that 80 to 82% of that is construction costs, 8 to 10% is design costs, and then 9 to 11% is the pieces that will come out of the relocation. While we are defining the scope in more detail, we do know some basic parameters of the project that we have to meet. We have to eliminate the water intrusion. We will be meeting all of our equity goals, our sustainability goals. We will be completing the relocation and the temporary moves to support the project, whether that's staying in the building or moving out of the building. We will be improving technology to bring it up to current standards and be able to work for the city and into the future. We'll be upgrading accessibility of the building, upgrading and replacing our building systems, that's the mechanical, the electrical, the plumbing systems, upgrading our seismic stability of the building, and improving the workplace overall.
We might need to add to that list to maintain the historic exterior.
Absolutely.
Just to make sure that we keep remembering that.
Yes.
I know you do anyway, and you'll have to through the application
yes.
process.
We already have a date with Landmarks Commission, so that is definitely in the forefront. And with that, I'll turn it over to Howard S. Wright and the DLR Group to tell you a little bit about their experience and our equity approach.
Thank you, Kristen. I'm Todd Miller with Howard S. Wright. On behalf of DLR Group, our design partner, we're really excited to be considered as the design build team for the project. We bring a good bit of experience and wanted to highlight two projects that are very similar in nature, but with different variables. One is the Edith Green Wendell Wyatt project just across the park here. That was a collaborative delivery project that leveraged the benefits of the collaborative process, which this project is very unique, and it has a variety of puzzle pieces to it that need to be put together to come out with the best value solution. And this is a great project that represents our ability to do that. We did, in this project, do some significant structural improvements to the building. We ultimately opted as a collective team to relocate 26 agencies out of the building and phase through construction, bring them back into the building. It was successful and exceeded our social equity goals. Another project to share with you, the Henry Jackson Federal Building up in Seattle. That was a design-build project with DLR Group and Howard S. Wright. We did a full seismic improvement to that building. It's a 40-story building. And through the team assessment of that, we determined we were able to keep all employees in the building with minimal impact. So one of the items, obviously, first out of the gate for our team is to do a deep dive assessment as to what our structural options are given the scope of the project and determine, what is the optimal both, best value and cost, but also assess the impacts to employees in the building to come up with the right solution. So I think we've got the right team. We've got a fantastic set of behaviors, which is very important for a collaborative design-build process. I would agree with Fred that the way the team is coming together, this will be an exciting project that can, meet and exceed all the goals we've set. So with that, I'll turn it over to Rhonda to talk about our equity approach.
Good morning. I'm Rhonda Edmiston with Howard S. Wright, and I'll be the diversity manager on the project. And I just want to start out by commending the city. I think the city has the opportunity with this project to set new standards for small business MWESB inclusion on this project. I was really impressed when the city split the goals out so that there was a professional services goal and a construction goal, because quite often on these large projects, the design is done before the MWESB design community even knows that the project existed. So I was really personally excited to see this. As Christine mentioned, the city set a 20% DMWESB goal on the project. And another thing that was unique is that is split out with 8% minority, 8% women, and 4% emerging small business. And then Howard S. Wright committed to additional 21%. So that is our professional services goal. And we are well on our way. So far for phase one, in the last couple of weeks, we went through a process where we issued out requests for information to the number of firms listed on the slide, and we received 4 MBE responses, 10 WBE responses, and 4 emerging small business responses. We interviewed all of those firms, and then we selected 3 MBEs, 7 WBEs, and 1 emerging small business. So right now, for phase one, we sit at about 20.3% participation, and once we round out the team, we're projecting that we'll be more in the 25-26% range. So that's a good start on this project. The construction phase, that'll start a little bit later. Our goals are, the city set goal was 22% participation. We committed to an additional 3%, so we're shooting for 25%. And you can see the breakout where it's heavy for minority-owned businesses. Our construction phase starts a little bit later. But this fall, we will be selecting MEP, mechanical and electrical, our trade partners. And so our plan is to follow a process similar to what we did for the professional technical services in the selection and embed those trade partners within our team. I didn't mention that on the professional services, but that embedding the equity partners as part of the team is really critical, because they will be in, you know, initially in that big room working with all the other firms, and so they will gain the skills and the knowledge and be very critical to the delivery of this project. The rest of the construction, we're planning on early and frequent community outreach, because we want to make sure that the equity contractors are informed about the project, are knowledgeable about the project, and that they're excited so that they're saving time on their schedules to work on the project. We will do an analysis of the availability of the small businesses and their capacity so that we can build our bid packages to match that availability and capacity, and then we will tailor our solicitation to maximize participation, and then we'll focus on the job mentoring and coaching to ensure success of the small business firms. And then workforce training is another critical part of the job, so we will shoot to achieve all of the apprentice and then the split out of minority and female apprentices and minority and female journey workers on the project. And again, we'll do this through early engagement with the pre-apprentice and the apprentice training programs, such as the Oregon Tradeswomen, Constructing Hope, Portland Youth Builders. We will monitor how we're doing on a monthly basis, because that's critical to knowing exactly where we are so that we can make adjustments. And on Edith Green, it was really helpful because we were able to identify which trades had, didn't have the workers, and we could work with those trades to try to build the minority and women workers in those trades. And then we're really excited to fully engage with the school enrichment program efforts that the city is planning. And we've got a lot of experience working with young people through the Portland Workforce Alliance, the ACE Mentor Program, and then the construction camp process or program that's been going on in the city for probably 12 years now. So we're very excited to be doing this project for you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Any questions for this item, or we're ready to move on to?
We're ready to go.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. So on to the 1%. Do we have Dante? I didn't see Dante.
Director James is there.
We spent lots of time developing our approach to the 1%, and Dante, we're very pleased, stepped in to provide some leadership on additional meetings with the community and working with a variety of interested parties to come up with a final recommendation for you. So I think what we'll do is have Dante talk about the process and then Jamie talk about the substance without going into great detail, but see the categories and what we're proposing to accomplish.
Good morning. Dante James, Director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. Welcome back, Commissioner. I guess I could give you the short version. There was a community process that was engaged in under the direction of OMF to start with to get feedback and ideas and thoughts and questions, concerns from the community members on what this 1% should be, what it should look like, where it should go, how it should be divvied up, and received lots of feedback. And then a document was put together in that regard. The ECPC was also a part of this conversation, the Equitable Contracting and Purchasing Commission, which has recently come under the auspices of OEHR. There were, honestly, after the first iteration of it, still concerns. And we kind of pulled back, and it allowed me to engage with the ECPC really for the first time and try to address and reach consensus on what this should be, what the 1% should be. The ECPC had originally taken a vote on it and offered a recommendation on it, but honestly, it was not a concise decision on their part in terms of quantitatively how to make this, how to shape this. And so based upon the questioning and some of the confusion and some of the concerns about how it was drafted originally, we went back and then I met with, we had an ECPC meeting. I'd also talked to some folks in the community. There were people there at the meeting and further clarified what the ECPC's recommendation was, which was to heavily emphasize workforce development in lieu of focus on contracting, because their position was there are quite a few programs that support and address contractors and contracting firms, and there is a greater need in terms of workforce development, apprenticeship programs, things like that. So the culmination of that was their recommendation, ECPC anyway, that it be weighted 99%, 1%, and also removal of the administration costs that were originally in the document, removal of funding for the vendors who are currently in the building that was originally in the document, to remove those, that piece of fund, any funding for that from the 1%. So after then that decision and recommendation by them went back to some other community members and in speaking with OMF and the other recommendations that had come from other community members, the final document is what you see, which is currently $750,000 for workforce development, $200,000 for contracting. Then there's a $50,000 component that's set aside for a conversation and approach to creating a regional approach and template to doing this work. And so depending upon the utilization of that funding, it will return, if it's not all utilized within a certain period of time, that will return to the $750,000 for workforce development. So essentially it's an 80-20 document. Weighted workforce to contracting. So that's the short version, I think, of how we got where we are.
Thank you. Jamie?
Jamie Walt, OMF Facility Services Division. Just to reiterate what Dante said, the overall goal of this plan is to help support a workforce that will be available and able to work on future city or region-wide projects. These individuals and groups may not be working on the Portland building just because of the time that it might take to build them up through the process, but it's about providing the training and opportunities for these groups and individuals now so that we set them up for success in the future. So with the 1% funds, it was 1% for community opportunities and enhancements, and we've set that at $1 million. At this point, with some of the target budget still in flux, we knew that the hard construction costs were around $800,000 to $1 million. So to set certainty for this plan moving forward, we've set the $1 million price to be allocated across the three different categories that Dante stated. So just quickly to review those categories, we have $750,000 going towards workforce diversity. How do we recruit and retain minority women and disadvantaged business enterprises into the workforce? We have $200,000 support for minority women and disadvantaged business enterprises, a little less here because they already have some services to support them, but looking at how we can provide technical assistance to help them be successful in bidding on projects and also once they've been awarded contracts to keep them and help grow their capacity so they can do more work. And then again, the $50,000 for what we're calling continuity of opportunity. Metro is providing some leadership looking forward to how can we create a common conversation amongst the region, given that we're going to have a lot of future construction projects with really lofty goals for minority and women contracting. And so how do we work together with them to set ourselves up for future success? And so we will be monitoring the progress in reaching our goals. We will be setting clear metrics on how we will be allocating the money and making sure that the money is being utilized as we intended. And our Portland Building Community Oversight Committee will be providing the oversight on this plan.
May I ask a question to either you, Fred, or you, Dante? And it has to do with the sort of philosophy of workforce development and ensuring that we don't a series of what I'll call serial one-offs, where we make these investments and we're satisfied with whatever the outcomes by that project, but not necessarily track future benefits. Obviously, because of the nature of these projects and the fact that we do them episodically and in different bureaus, we're different than, say, the NECA IBEW partnership or any of the other established partnerships in the community where the relationship continues across public and private contracting. But I guess my question is, since our ultimate goal is to create long-term change and opportunity, how do we ensure that our workforce development investments benefit people beyond the duration of this contract?
That's the reference I made earlier into the continuity of opportunity. Every public entity in this region would like to do the same thing. And if we have not just a Washington Park Reservoir, a Portland Building, I said specific projects, but we also had a convention center hotel, a county courthouse, a port terminal improvement, all going to the same thing, there really would be a continuity where someone could be trained as a tradeswoman and not just finish this project and be done, but be able to go to other projects as well. So I think the answer is to get away from the project by project into a more regional approach, and that we're working on that.
Additionally, I think that the way and the criteria by which the money...
Could you put the mic a little closer?
I'm sorry.
Thanks, yeah.
That some of the ways that the criteria will be, or the allocation of the money will be determined, will be to evaluate what is the process by which they are looking at creating a long-term workforce that moves from apprentice to journey and through. And so it's not going to be allocated specifically for the one-off, as you say, but how are whoever receives the money going to be looking at the long-term approach to the workforce?
Thank you.
Thank you. You want to go ahead and present on item 862?
I just have a question on this one. Actually, I know the answer, but I'm very pleased to see that the existing vendors on the first floor are going to be taken care of with the main project budget rather than out of this 1%. Just for the folks at home, could you tell them what is being done for the vendors?
You're exactly what I wanted to say. because I wanted to mention the vendors since Jamie made a reference. We looked at precedents, what others do, and we ended up saying the following. We are providing rent forgiveness. We're collecting no rent starting July 1 while they're remaining in the building. And recall they have month-to-month leases. So theoretically, you don't have to do much, but we do want to do something. So we're saying rent forgiveness. We're giving at least 1 year notice on when we make the decision. If everyone's out of the building, we'll give them 1 year notice. We'll provide relocation assistance because that part of our contract is to have relocation of our city employees. And we'll provide right of first refusal if the design envisions the same sort of cafeteria operation or whatever, give them first chance at it. So that was our package, and I sent you all a memo in May on that, saying that we thought this was a fair treatment.
Thank you for doing that. May I just add my plea to, yes, please have some vendors on the ground floor, because often I don't have time to go to anywhere else.
Okay. Okay, so that's this portion, and now we turn to the money.
Okay.
Ken Rust and Eric Johansson know about that.
Morning, members of council. For the record, I'm Ken Rust. I'm the city's chief financial officer and the director of the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services. The Portland Building Project has had a finance team led by myself that's been working on a variety of funding plan options and a financing plan that will support the project. With some of the work that we've been doing, and I know you're familiar with, is the development of a blended rate lease model that will support this project and all of our downtown office space when we move back into the reconstructed building beginning in fiscal year 2021. I want to acknowledge the hard work that Aaron Beck has provided me and the rest of the team and lots of different numbers that we've been running, and he will continue to do that. But he's really the person behind me that makes everything work, and I appreciate his support on the project. We've also worked hard to accommodate the desire of water, the bureaus of water and BES, to be owners in the reconstructed Portland building. And so we have developed an ownership option that will allow them to finance that space that provides a financial benefit to them in the way their financial model works in terms of impacts on rates and charges. So our funding plan includes that as well. And during the course of all of the work, we've had regular reviews with the city budget office. We've reviewed our plans with them, made sure that we were seeing things correctly, and have used their input in fine-tuning the plan as well. The ordinance in front of you this morning, ordinance number 862, is the ordinance that authorizes the financing for the project. And I'd like to have Eric Johansson, the city's debt manager, walk you through the specifics of the financing ordinance so that you're familiar with that. Eric.
Thanks, Ken. This is a non-emergency ordinance, and it authorizes the issuance of up to $195 million of bonds to fund short and long-term financing for the Portland building reconstruction. Our current financing plan for the project includes two phases. First, an interim financing phase that will begin later on this fiscal year and run through project completion and estimated in 2020. At that point in time, we'll be issuing long-term takeout financing to repay the lines of credit, and debt service is expected to begin in fiscal 2021. One thing that's a little bit different about this one, we are authorizing $195 million, but it'll probably be done in three parts. The first part, the largest part, will be for everybody other than water and BES, and then water and BES will respectively be selling revenue bonds for their respective purchase price of the building. It's a little hard right now to know what the annual debt service will be all in for the project, because we don't know what rates will be in 5 years. We've done some pretty conservative estimating, and we think it's going to be roughly around $15 million all in for all three components. But that will depend, of course, on interest rates in 2020 and other factors, including rates on the lines of credit and cash contribution to the project. But that's where the finance plan stands now. Happy to take any questions.
Questions? Okay. Thank you.
I guess I have one question, Dan. You're trying to do some forecasting of rates and 5 years out. At the utilities, we do five-year forecasts, and we build in fairly conservative assumptions. The truth is that the interest rates we use in our five-year forecast generally are above where the market lands, and we've been in a historically low level. Provided the utilities, like the Water Bureau, continues to maintain a AAA credit rating, and unless there's some unforeseen event, do you anticipate a continued favorable rate environment?
I do. I mean, we're subject certainly to bigger things that are going on in the world right now. Our estimate at 5% right now is about 2.5 percentage points higher than what I think we would do today. So that's how conservative that we are right now, and it's, I think, consistent or a little bit more aggressive than what the bureaus have put into their financial forecast.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because we at budget time, we sometimes get asked, why are the forecast rates for the utilities typically, particularly in water, above where we end up landing? And the answer is we build in some pretty conservative placeholder numbers around interest because we can't anticipate global events and market conditions. And then when we find that interest rates continue to be historically low, we're able to bring those forecasts down, which is why this year the combined rate increase is just above 4%, which would not be possible if interest rates doubled. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And we'll now take did you have further?
No, that's it. Those are the three items, and with your approval, we will continue to move.
Okay, well, let's take see if anybody wants to testify on any of these three items. Is there, Carly, anybody signed up to testify?
Yes, I have five people signed up. The first three are Shedrick Wilkins, Mike Jennings, and Mary Eng. She may have left.
I don't see Mary here, so
why
don't you call
them? We'll go with Charles Johnson.
Okay, come on up.
Hi, I'm Shedrick Wilkins, and I'm interested in this term called reconstruction. I've learned in the last 6 years at Tocqueville and Portland City Council, I've learned terminology like deconstruction, reconstruction. I would say in a ballpark, if you reconstruct a building, it's probably 10% of the cost of building it in the first place. And for people here that are into the environment, another 10%, you could put solar cells and hot water solar heaters on top. So that's one-fifth of the of building an entirely new building. And I live on NATO Drive. Bill NATO, his family started in Japan rebuilding buildings that were bombed by us in World War II. And then he came over here and did the same thing with brick buildings. Brick buildings can be reinforced with steel and concrete cracks. Bricks are better. You just put steel frames on them. And a lot of buildings in Chinatown have steel framing on bricks. I think if you're interested in solar energy, it would be best to do these things instead of like the 20-story Ida Green building. I thought they were putting solar panels on top, not a rain collector. But I was intrigued about that. Five or four-story buildings in East Multnomah County might be better. On a side topic about this meeting, I have decided maybe that I will run for the Mount Hood Community College School Board. There's some jerk out there. Anyway, I'm not going to get into this. So I might run for office, in which I would like to promote the skills of reconstruction, which doesn't require a university degree to be a professional architect. One can just use community college skills to mount things and basically, reconstruction would be more of a repair job on a building, which are skills taught at the community college. And then, of course, you have a university grad say it's safe.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Good morning, commissioners. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson. And while this overall number is, I think, a little bit, causes a little bit of apprehension among city residents and taxpayers, I think that you've constructed a plan that the aspect that hasn't been discussed is ensuring your reelection. The main difference between this project and the Edith Green Wendell Wyatt building is that you all are right here, and 2020 will be an election year. So I hope that the promises from Howard S. Wright can be fulfilled. And I think that you have done a good job with the due diligence. I was pleased that after we got through the some more dry stuff that the gentleman from Howard S. Wright came here and made it clear that they have experience and success doing the project across the on the other side of Terry Shrunk Plaza, which was the situation where they moved everyone out, and that when they worked on the 40-story building in Seattle, they were able to keep almost everyone in place. So I know it's going to be a little bit of an interesting and stressful uncertainty maybe for the Bureau employees over there. The other thing that I hope that citizens and also yourselves will become fluent in is this kind of viva neoliberalismo, the neoliberalism of saying that we're taking the city building and paying for it through the rate-generating agencies. So if there's a repurposing of the place that houses water and environmental services, whatever new agencies might be there will have to pay the agencies that rebuilt the building. Nobody seems to really know if that's, I mean, it's the public policy that's in favor right now. I'm not sure it's the best public policy. It's not the one that built this building. But good luck, y'all, and thanks for your work on this project.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on either of these three items?
John O. had signed up, but he may have left.
Okay. So I'll entertain a motion to accept the procurement report.
Sorry.
Second. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Oh, okay. He is here. Okay. Welcome. If you could just give us your name, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is John O. I'm the owner of the Cafe Portlandia, and I am the one of the three Portland building vendors who have provided goods and sundries to city employees for over 20 years collectively. The reconstruction of the Portland building impacts our businesses and our livelihood. We are no longer in position to be able to sell our businesses because there are no buyers because of pending construction and dislocations. This reduces the value of our businesses to nothing. We understand that there are provisions being established for us. We have been told that these include a minimum of 1 year's notice of need to vacate. Waiving our rent for the last year of tenancy, providing us with relocation support by including us in the brokerage services for the Portland building, and giving us a right of first refusal upon the city's return to the reconstructed building. While we appreciate these concessions, this does not cover the impacts of our businesses or our futures. We have families that we support and who rely on our income. Moving our businesses, while possible, is costly both for moving the equipment and establishing a new clientele. It takes about 3 years to establish new clientele, and that lost revenue cannot be recovered. In order to compensate for the impacts of our businesses, we are asking that you consider purchasing our businesses from us. Another alternative is to provide us monetary compensation to cover the cost of moving, marketing, and establishing new businesses in new location. Chang Sim, owner of BC2, requests $150,000 in compensation, and the owner of the Galloway requests $100,000 in compensation. For Cafe Portlandia, my situation is a little different. As I have kitchen equipment that is not easily relocated due to size and weight, the cost to move the equipment, set up a new restaurant, and return to the building once construction is approximately $250,000. I request funding to cover these expenses. Also, request that upon return to the Portland building, that my operation be turnkey, which means that it is in running condition and I can start business right away. Please consider supporting us either through the 1% fund or through the city's overall budget process so that the impact of our involuntary displacement can be mitigated. Thanks for listening. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. O.
Thank you for coming in to testify, and I'm going to continue to ask about what's being done for your business and the other businesses, and I can assure you that if you do relocate, that I will be there to tell everybody what a great service you provide and what delicious food you give. So thank you, and we'll continue to work with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, a motion to accept the procurement report.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Please call the roll, Carly.
Novick?
I really appreciate the discussion, which Commissioner Fish touched off, but our team is obviously ready for, about having a regional and multi-project approach over the next several years to workforce development. And I trust that, I mean, we are in communication with the Convention Center Hotel and the county, and that's really encouraging. So I just wanted to highlight that. Aye.
Fritz.
I appreciate Fred and your staff and this whole presentation. That was very clear, and having Howard S. Wright coming in to talk to us about your part in it, and also having seen the great success of the Edith Green building, I'm very hopeful and confident that this will be done well. Aye.
Fish.
Yeah, I want to especially thank Fred for the bulldog approach to moving this project forward. This presentation is clear and concise, and there's a logic to moving forward, but there's been a lot of work behind the scenes, and there's a lot of moving pieces, and frankly, I'm pleasantly surprised we're at this point. Dante, I want to thank you for your partnership and your role in this, and your testimony, Fred, to your whole team, Christine, and everyone. And I want to just piggyback off of something one of my colleagues said earlier. These council discussions end up being pretty dry, and we talk about, we use acronyms and targets, and we talk about things within a legal framework. But let's be very clear what the council is committed to. We're committed to using a portion of the cost of rehabilitating this building to create meaningful opportunity in our community for people that for too long have been left behind in some of the construction trades. And we're not satisfied with saying that for the duration of this contract, you're going to get a chance to develop your skills. We want to see that person continue up the ladder of opportunity. And I love the idea of thinking holistically throughout all the contracts we do at the city and then regionally, because the person that gains a skill set on this project ought to be able to go to a Water Bureau project or a parks project or, frankly, a regional project with that skill and continue to advance forward with the goal of becoming self-sufficient and productive. So that's what we're talking about. The language we use is dry, but the values behind it is about opportunity. And so thank you all for your good work. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I appreciate all the work everybody's done. I appreciate the continued express commitment to bring this project in at less than $195 million. And I appreciate Howard S. Wright, DLR, for increasing the minority and women in emerging small business goal the city had by a few percentage points. That's trending in the right direction. And I really appreciate the breaking out the goals in terms of the professional technical services versus construction. I think it's great that you're doing that, and we're looking at it with those eyes on. That there's, it's a whole different world how you deal with the professional technical services, and it's a whole different world how you deal with construction contracts. And it takes sophistication to achieve our goals in that. So thank you, and please to vote aye. So the report is accepted, and now we move on to resolution, which is 861. Please call the roll.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Again, thanks to Fred Miller, also Jamie Waltz and Kristen Wells of the building team, and Christine Moody of procurement, and especially to Dante James and the Office of Equity and Human Rights. I commend Mayor Hales for having moved the Equitable Contracting and Procurement Commission to the Office of Equity and Human Rights, along with Bryant Eng. And I really am hopeful that we, you know, for the seven plus years that I've been on the council, we've been trying to figure out a system to, with community involvement, with community agreement and consensus, to figure out how we can get more of the community's money going into more community businesses. So this is another great step forward, and I appreciate it. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I appreciate Director James getting involved in this and bringing it home to us. I think is a good sound landing and a good commitment on our part. Aye. Okay, the resolution is adopted, and 862 moves to a second reading next week. So let's return to our regular agenda, which